Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring.
And welcome back to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya. And the third man pitching tonight is from In the Square Circle, Felipe Leon, who has just dropped off while we were going live right now. I don't know what happened. I know he's having some trouble on his computer here, but he'll be back on shortly. Anyway, some big news in boxing. Couple of things we got. You know, there's a couple of things we're going to be running through. Obviously, the meltdown with PBC is still out there. They got some more reports. New York attorney stating that they're going to be suing the financial outfit that funded the PBC, and they were as well as PBC was mentioned in the lawsuit. There, I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted here with my phone. My phone's going off the hook for some reason. And then you got Andre Ward announcing he's going to be fighting Sully Barrera here in Oakland, California, in the Bay Area. poor Felipe, man. He's having some trouble right now. He's getting kicked off of the show, getting back on and stuff. Welcome to a live show here, Felipe. but then big news
like,
is...
we're like two or 300 episodes in. We're like, all right, you'll figure it out. Don't worry.
You'll figure it out, man. Don't worry. Don't panic, man. Billy Dibb. Opening up a bit about having his promotional relationship with 50 Cent being finally dismissed. It's over between those two. And he says that 50 Cent owes him some dough. 50 Cent responded on Instagram that, you know, he was pretty much, you got to read it. I'll kind of thumb right through it in a short bit, but we're going to move on. And Billy's supposed to be on the show. Hopefully, we can get a hold of him. I know the number he sent to me wasn't working, and we're trying to sort that out here on Leaving the Ring, and we can get him on and ask him some questions about what happened between what happened between him and 50 Cent there. So that's going to be really interesting. Hopefully, we can get him on. We can get that all sorted out, and we'll be able to move forward with that interview. So, anyways, hey, tomorrow night. Lenny the Fightsmith is going to be debuting his first show called Technical Draw, and his first guest is going to be with Lou DiBella. That's going to be pretty interesting. I can't wait for that.
I like that name. That's a good name, Technical Draw. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to his interview. And he's, he just seems to – it's what you want to see with somebody. They're looking at the sport, but looking at it from a different angle. Hoping to learn something, to gain some knowledge, and probably leave the sport better than you found it. You know, I like that about what Lenny's approach. It's kind of what the whole Leave It in the Ring network seems to be about. It's people that really, really care about the sport, want to do their jobs in order to aid the sport, along. Like Steve talks about the business end, and you know, people can label him as a hater, but like the guy is one of the very first internet journalists to ever be credentialed. He's been doing it a long time. He had a radio show a long time before he was even a boxing writer. But he's put the time in, and when, to me, having observed him over almost 10 years, everything he's doing, in my opinion, is about making sure that the sport survives. And maybe you can argue that it's about old versus new. I was kind of setting the table for some of the PBC stuff we're talking about and 50 Cent stuff we'll talk about tonight. You know, there's some guys that kind of come in and try to do it the old way, don't survive, kind of find it, it's a sea of sharks that have been there a long time. Then you have the Al Heyman way, which is, we were hoping with this other guest that we were going to have that decided not to come on, to talk about that, in a different light, the PBC, potentially from a positive light. There's a lot of different forces working against each other in the sport, and it's, Lenny, Technical Draw, can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that, especially with his first guest is going to be Lou DiBella. Let me check. Hey, Felipe, you on? You should be on. Oh, I can hear you.
Thank God. Yes.
Hey, sorry about that, guys. I am in a third world country in Tijuana, Mexico. So, like the water the internet is not, you know, the most reliant thing here.
Hey, you sound like you're in a tunnel running drugs across the lines here, buddy. That's what you sound like right now.
Hey, you know, that's my part-time job. I don't need you to put it in all over the internet, please.
He's driving one of El Chapo's tunnels right now. Just
Hey, you know, you guys are all, Gabriel, you're all the way in the Bay Area. David is all the way. I'm right here, guys. I'm in the trenches. Stop saying names. Please.
Stop dumping names off the poor guy, man. Andre Ward has finally signed on to fight Sully Barrera in Oakland, the Oracle Arena. It's something that that was, you know, in talk. Didn't look like it was going to happen. But what do we know about Barrera, Felipe? What do we know really about this kid that's going to be stepping in the ring with one of the guys that's been considered the best and has cleaned out the 168 division, Andre Ward?
You know, what we do know is he's a Cuban, you know, so he has a little bit of a Cuban style. I think he's a little bit more aggressive than your normal Cuban, like Rigondeaux or somebody of that nature. He's trained by Abel Sanchez up there in Big Bear. Is he still trained up there with Abel, Gabriel?
He is indeed.
I think he is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so he is trained by Abel, because Abel, like, he goes through like water sometimes, except for Gennady Golovkin. And but the thing is, to me, and I've been thinking about this since I heard about this fight. I mean, the guy's undefeated. He's gotten some good wins, you know, Kara Murat, you know, and some other guys out there. But we know that Andre Ward is probably not going to take a fight that he doesn't feel that he can win, you know. I mean, he has taken some tough fights, especially in the Super 8 years and years ago, but that's not the same Andre Ward that we have now. That Andre Ward was, you know, he was active.
Hungry.
He was fighting every so often. He was hungry. Now we have the businessman Andre Ward, and he's making business decisions. So, to me, he took this fight because he has a pretty good idea of how to beat this guy, him and Virgil Hunter. So it's a safe bet before that, what should be a pay-per-view fight in November between him and Sergey Kovalev. So this is a good fight, I feel, that he thinks, to get him back in the ring, get shake off that ring rust, beat a guy that is building somewhat of a name, but maybe is not as dangerous as we might think he is for him, and then go after Sergey Kovalev and make that pay-per-view money. And then if you beat Sergey, then Andre Ward is back on the map.
Let me ask you this, because let's go back a little bit. A hungry fighter that pretty much dominated the Super 6, and then from there, you thought that his name was just going to skyrocket into superstardom, right? But didn't even happen. Now it's turned into the business suave kind of guy. Really, are you convinced, Gabriel, that he has done some really good business decisions in terms of leading his own career?
You know, it depends. You know, if he wins this fight and then comes, you know, looks good doing it and goes into a Kovalev fight, and there's big money for it, maybe they even go pay-per-view, then kind of like Amir Khan, who sat out for a while, you know, he was looking for that big fight. Now he's getting reportedly, you know, $8 million to face Canelo. In a risky fight, everybody's picking him to lose, so if he loses, you know, he can go back and have options at 47 or even 54 if he likes the weight. It's a smart move. And I think for Ward, you know, this is a risky fight, but it's also a tough enough fight that if he wins it, he'll gain everybody's respect. I mean, Barrera is a guy that, you know, he's a Cuban. He turned pro late. He's 33 years old. He's actually the older guy in this fight. But he's got good size to him. He's actually the taller guy, 6'2", 73-inch reach, to Andre's 6 foot, 71-inch reach. He has amateur wins over some good names. I think, like, Chad Dawson is one of them. I mean, I know it's the amateurs, but, you know, Chad Dawson and Bebut Shumanov are people he beat in the amateurs. So, I mean, he's also competed, you know, at a high level, I think, at the World Junior Championships, Cuban Nationals, 2002, 2003. So he's not looking at Andre Ward and seeing something he's never seen before. Maybe on the pro level, but I find his record interesting in that, you know, he starts out with the requisite knockouts like anybody does, but then in the middle of his career, Barrera starts to go rounds, and then as of late, he's been knocking guys out. it says that, you know, he's probably ready to jump up to this level. And if Ward, it's hard to say if he's mismanaged his career or if he's simply been managing his body and letting it heal up. I mean, he's a guy that's had knee, he's had other different injuries. Maybe he's just happy to have it all healed up and do a nice stretch run towards a lot of money the back end of his career. I mean, look at how long Floyd fought, you know, to the almost close to 40, making all that money in the back end. So I'm trying not to judge people until their career is over. Thus far, though, I can see why people are looking at.
I think we lost Gable here for a moment here, Felipe. What do you think?
Oh, I thought it was me. I freaked out. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, he got dropped off in the call.
Yeah. Hey, but just going off what Gabriel was saying, you know, this is a pretty good step-up fight for Sullivan Barrera. I mean, just going back to his last three fights, I mean, he fought in January. He fought, you know, remember Jeff Lacy, you know, left hook Lacy? He fought Jeff Lacy. I mean, that, you know, it is what it is, Jeff Lacy in 2015. You know,
right.
Not much to say about that. But then we can have a guy Yeah, Hakeem Sulika, who was 21-7, never heard of the guy, but I mean, he had a pretty good record. And then he beat Kara Murat in his last fight in five rounds. So it's a little bit of a jump for Sullivan Barrera, but 17-0, and then with the type of resume that Gabriel described, I mean, he does have a chance. But I think at this point in Andre Ward's career, coming back from that somewhat of a hiatus, he's going to take a fight that he feels pretty confident that he's going to win, and then he's going to go for that Sergey Kovalev fight.
Well, we know
Virgil said that he likes this fight.
Right. But we know one thing for sure. Either this is going to be the coming out party for Barrera, or we're going to find out exactly where Ward has been at. You know, has his body fully healed? Has this long layoff and these big, you know, long spurts of not fighting? Is it going to really affect him? You know, because to make a comeback, if this is the fight of choice for him to see where we can gauge where he's at now in his body. Okay, I'm being given another number. In his body, then we're going to really solely know whether or not he's made great business decisions in terms of his career and in his body and trying to allow it to heal. It's a tough matchup, guys. Hey, go ahead and guys continue. I'm going to see if this number works that Billy's sending, giving me right now, okay?
Here's the thing, too, I think, that with Barrera is that he is pretty smooth. He's a well-schooled fighter. He can be a little raw at times. He's not quite as smooth as Ward's game, but Ward didn't look that good to me in the Paul Smith fight. He didn't quite see. I mean, you know, granted, you could say, you know, it's rust, but I mean, if you've been in the gym long enough, I don't understand why you would be that rusty. He looked like his legs weren't quite under him. So I'm very curious to see what he's like with a guy that, you know, regardless of the competition, Barrera has been fighting. You know, so he's sharp. He's ready to go. Will Ward be able to match that?
Now, another question, too, Gabriel, is what do you think of the experience factor? I mean, Andre Ward, I mean, as far as current fighters, you know, there isn't that many that have the experience that Andre Ward has. I mean, the only experience that I think is missing from Andre Ward is actually traveling, you know, how in the Super Six, it pretty much was the hometown fighter in every one of those fights, whereas the other guys were traveling from across the pond or across the country to face Andre Ward. But Sullivan Barrera, I mean, really, he's been fighting, you know, he fought in Vegas, he fought at the Foxwood, his last fight with the Civic Auditorium, and I think he might have been the main event in the last fight, but that experience factor going into the Oracle Arena in Oakland where, you know, say what you will, but it's going to be a pro Andre Ward crowd, you know, it's going to be on HBO, so I don't know if that's somewhat of a factor in this fight also.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, I think, luckily for Barrera, he comes from a camp, you know, at the summit there with Abel Sanchez. I think the philosophy there is, let's get down and fight. Let's really dig in with every shot, chop a guy down. They know that that's the mission, and that's the philosophy up there. So I don't think Barrera has any illusions that he needs at least a few knockdowns you know, and probably the stoppage in order to come away with the victory there. I mean, they're not the lead promoter. You know, although here's another aspect to it. I don't know if it's been reported, but the fight is going to be tested by VADA, the Voluntary Anti-Doping Agency's Twitter account, tweeted out, you know, they welcomed them to the program. And when they do that, that usually means that, that always means, I should say, that they've gone through all the paperwork and everything and everybody's checked out. All the forms have been filled out and details and such, whereabouts forms like that have been worked out. And the program, the testing has officially begun. So it's a clean fight, you know, if you believe in that sort of thing. So that's another good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. I mean, we're having a how much do you think that was as far as part of the camp decision, or do you think it's coming from Roc Nation, or do you think it's coming from HBO? What do you think that whole VADA thing is?
If I had to if I had to take an educated guess, and I, you know, I haven't talked to anybody at VADA, just looking at the situation, I bet your Main Events is who asked for it. Just they've been using VADA lately. You know, I think the Kovalev Pascal also had VADA, and I know Kathy's been very supportive in the press about you know, going with that company and believing in that company. So I'm not even sure, you know, if USADA is the company of choice for the PBC anymore. I don't know if you heard that episode on The Next Round, but we talked about it. How
I missed The Next Round, Gabriel. I never missed The Next Round.
Well, there you go. I appreciate that. the Tarver Cunningham testing. It was IDTN. It was a different company that did it. You know, and there's still no suspension there. That whole thing. I mean, I want to get into a longer discussion about the PBC, but we're still trying to get this guy on the phone. So I don't know if Dave is back.
I'm back. My phone is, for some reason, it's not allowing me to call. It keeps dropping the call as soon as it rings.
Let me give it a shot.
Okay, so let's get into it here, because we're going to be getting Billy D. Deb on the show. You know, it was reported that he had said that he's owed $1.2 million from 50 Cent, and he said it was basically a nightmare. Could never get a hold of 50 Cent. Didn't know where anything was gonna happen. What was the next move? You know, so obviously we got our questions for Billy, about, you know, I'm wondering how it even came around of him getting signed by 50 Cent. What, you know, what was the conversation of that happening there? But a little later today, Felipe, you had sent me the Instagram of 50 Cent responding back to Billy. And
you want me to read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got all the quotes up. Okay, if you got to do it, absolutely. Or I could play Billy and you could play 50 if you'd like, however you want to do it.
Well, I mean, the thing is that 50 Cent, what he wrote it as far as Instagram, it's pretty funny. I'm going to go and I quote Curtis Jackson, otherwise known as 50 Cent. The truth
Hold
is
on.
Billy D
Wait
was
a, minute.
A grateful Hold fighter. What's that?
Hold on. I believe we have Billy on with us, right? Billy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man. I can hear you guys.
Hey, thanks for coming through, bro. We were having problems trying to get call you through. For some reason, every time I called you, it just dropped. It wouldn't even go through. It would ring once and then drop and stuff. So I apologize, man. But thanks for making it here on Leaving the Ring.
No problem, man. Thank you for having me.
So we were going to get into right now what – I don't know if you had a chance to see the response from 50 Cent on his Instagram. Did you get to read that, what he had to say responding back to
– I don't care about what 50 Cent has to say. I mean, he knows the truth, you know, and at the end of the day, I know the truth. He knows the truth, and the truth will set you free, you know. He says that Gradovich took the fight on 1 month's notice, but so did I, you know what I mean? What 50 Cent failed to tell you is about what happened in the lead-up to all that. You know what I mean? What 50 Cent failed to tell you is how his big mouth got us taken off the Showtime card. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's so much more to reveal, but it's all going to happen in time.
Is that something that we can we touch on a little bit to find out what I mean, you know, you're kind of giving us a little bit, but not all of it. You know, I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. What happened? I mean, what was the lead up into that?
It's very simple. Andre Darol left him, you know, blue chip boxers trying to leave him. You know, you got Gamboa trying to get out of his contract. Everyone's trying to get away from 50 Cent. So does that say something? I think the suit follows. You know what I mean? The guy
right.
promised the world and delivered Dallas. You know what I mean? The truth is that, you know, we only all signed on because we thought Floyd Mayweather was going to be a part of it. And then unfortunately, you know, we were all stuck in contract because we signed a contract to 50 Cent because at the time Floyd Mayweather was in jail. We couldn't get away. What can we do?
So,
well, can we back up to the – how you doing, Billy? This is Gabriel Montoya, formerly of Max Boxing, but now we're leaving in the ring here. And Felipe Leon is also here from SD Fights and other outlets.
Good day, mate.
Thanks for coming on. I just wanted to go back to the beginning because I'm very curious to see how this all started because it seems like there was confusion. Like, at first it seemed like there was going to be a Floyd Mayweather 50 Cent breakaway promotional company. This is like right before the PBC is about to happen. You were a part of it. Other fighters are a part of it. How were you approached and how did it begin for you with fitness?
Well, man, look, originally I was approached when I was a champion of the world. I was the IBF champion of the world. You know, again, 50 tries to downplay my credentials. But here's the truth. You know, I fought in the U.S. Prior to signing to 50 Cent, I only had a close loss to Stephen Luevano. And then I went on and did what I had to do, whether he says I fought cab drivers or not. Mate, I'll tell you something. You don't win world titles easily. It's not easy to win a world title. You know, I beat Jorge Lasieva to win the championship of the world. Then I defended it against Alberto Cervidi, Eduardo Escobedo. Eduardo Escobedo is known in America. He's given some of the guys, some top fighters, a tough fight. I stopped him in 6 rounds. You know what I mean? My credentials speak for themselves. You can't take that title away from me. And, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, do you think 50...
And the thing is, this is what happened. 50 Cent signed me up as a champion of the world. But when I traveled to the U.S. to meet with 50 Cent, I traveled there under the impression that I would be signing to 50 Cent as well as Floyd Mayweather. The contract stipulated that I'd be signed to Mayweather Promotions and that was going to be called TMT Promotions. So that's my contract is under TMT Promotions. And then 50 and Floyd had a fallout, and unfortunately, I got caught in the middle of the crossfire and had to make a decision. And, you know, money had been paid and things like that. And so, you know, bonuses were given out to all the fighters. And, you know, we were basically stuck with 50 Cent. That's exactly what happened. You know, and it's, you know, I'm not bagging 50. At the end of the day, the guy tried, but he failed. You know what I mean? That's the truth. He tried, but he failed. He says that, oh, I can only get you the fights, but I can't fight for you. Yeah, that's true. You can't get the fight. You can't fight for me. But why don't you reveal to the public exactly what you did in the lead up to them fights? I basically went into those fights a, you know, very disheartened fighter. You know what I mean? Like when you got a happy fighter is a good fighter. But when you got a fighter that's disheartened and a fighter that's very upset and arguing with his promotional company, he's not going to perform.
Did you get the sense? Well, I'm trying to figure out the distinction too. Of I'm not doubting your story. I just wanted clarity. When you thought it was going to be Floyd and Fitty, were you signing with Fitty as like the manager, and Floyd was going to be the promoter?
No, or... I had a manager.
Gotcha.
Their company was they were promoters. They were gotcha. Look, this is what happened. 50 came in and was trying to get Al Haymon out of the picture. We all know the story. And Floyd Mayweather wasn't having it, you know what I mean? And for all we know, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like Floyd's a very smart guy, you know what I mean? I got a lot of time for Floyd. I got a lot of respect for him. He's a great champion. He's done great things in the sport of boxing. But look, at the end of the day, you know, 50 Cent, he tried, but he failed, you know what I mean? That's all right. Sometimes you got to try and you got to fail. But don't try and fail and ruin people's careers, you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, I could have stayed home in Australia, defending my world title, earn a lot more money, you know, instead of signing with him and being underpaid, you know?
Yeah. Did you feel like there was no promotional plan? I remember meeting Fitty when he came out with Gamboa at the Fortune Gym down in L.A. in Hollywood. And I kept asking him. Aaron was there. It was a double bill, I believe. And he was there introducing 50 Cent. And we were all meeting him as the first time as a promoter on the West Coast. And he wouldn't answer the question about when are you going to do your own card and not just be on somebody else's card. Did you get a sense when he was pitching you at first that there would be, you know, 50 Cent cards and you would be getting TV dates and it would be like other promoters?
That's exactly what I thought. But, you know, at the end of the day, to you guys, you know, things happen for a reason. And, you know, that was what was written for me to be in my life. And, you know, I'm just, as I said, I'm just glad that I could close that chapter and I'm finally a free agent and I can go do what I got to do now.
Hey there, Billy. It's Felipe Leon from FightNews.com and other outlets. How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good. Hey, quick question. You mentioned that, you know, there were some bonuses paid and that you were under the impression that you were going to sign with Floyd Mayweather. So I'm assuming that you were paid a bonus. Do you think that at that moment, you, if you were to have given back that bonus, you could have probably gotten out of the contract once you knew that Mayweather wasn't going to be involved?
I think so. I really do think so. You know what I mean? I really think had I given back that bonus, things might have been a little bit different.
And my next question, you mentioned in the article that I read as far as you getting out, ending the contract and everything, that you're owed, you know, seven figures and that you were only paid fractions of your purses. I could only imagine that on your contract with 50 Cent, you had minimums for these fights. How did it come about that you weren't paid at least those minimums and then you're now owed, you know, that amount of money? Like, how did that conversation go, where he would tell you?
The thing is that I was promised a nine-fight deal over 3 years, and unfortunately 50 Cent was only able to deliver on four of those fights. And when I took those fights, you know, I was under the impression that I would be getting paid my minimum, and I wasn't even getting paid my minimum. So then what happened after that was, you know, the contract ran out, 3 years had run up, and I hadn't been given the nine fights, and the contract stipulated that if I wasn't given the nine fights at the end of the term, I would be paid out in full. Well, I wasn't paid out anything.
Okay, that makes sense. So as far as, you know, how did that conversation go when you receive your check?
50 Cent's a very, very smart guy. Why do you think he claimed bankruptcy? Because he owes so many people so much money. You know what I'm saying? He claims bankruptcy, right, so he doesn't have to pay anybody. I was getting these letters from the Connecticut state saying that if I need to file anything against 50 Cent, but why would I even bother? Why would I even bother?
Yeah, it's going to just be court fees.
Well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to even bother.
As far as you receiving those checks that weren't for your minimums, you know, what was that conversation like? Would you go up to, you know, 50 or one of his representatives and say...
That's what people need to understand. The reasons why I would go into these fights disheartened and I looked like, you know, I fought, if you look at the fights that I had in the first fight against Gradovich, you can see like sort of an angry fighter. I was sort of angry, you know, I fought, like the style that I fought wasn't really the style that I usually fight. You know, I was a little bit angry because it was revealed to me only, you know, a few days before the fight what I was going to get paid and it wasn't my minimum and I was so upset, you know.
Wow.
What was the reason? You know, what was the reason that you weren't paid your minimum? Did he say it had something to do with TV, costs? What was the reason they say, hey, buddy, you know, you're not going to get paid what your contract says, but you're going to get paid this much? I mean, he had to give you some kind of a reason, right?
Well, the reason was is that because he said, oh, ESPN doesn't give the budget that you know, networks like HBO and Showtime do. So, you know, and then when I fought on HBO on the undercard of Manny Pacquiao and Brendan Rios, he still didn't give me my minimum, you know what I mean? So, you know, fair is fair, and at the end of the day, you know, in time I'm going to reveal all this, I'm going to reveal a book, and in my book I'm going to put it all out, and I'm going to show everybody, I'm going to show the contracts of what I got paid, I'm going to show the contracts of what I was promised, I'm going to reveal all, and I'm going to show the 50 cents a joke.
When he didn't start taking your calls anymore, was this after the Pacquiao and Rios undercard, when you started talking about how you would call him and he'd never return your calls, or was this during the whole time you were involved with him?
Nah, he was just a very hard person to catch. And I can understand 50 Cent's a very busy guy. You know, from time to time he would take our calls, but, you know, majority of the time he was busy. He would, you know, he'd say, I'll call you back, and he wouldn't call back and things like that. So, you know, it became frustrating to deal with the company, you know, like, I can tell you now, I was signed to Golden Boy Promotions, and it was one of the most professional teams that I've ever dealt with. You know, every time we called, Eric Gomez always called us back. You know, David Istuich always called us back. You know, like, we just had access to the company. it was just very hard because 50 Cent didn't seem to not know, you know, the direction that he was going in.
What do you think is the lesson learned for, in your opinion, that you would express to other fighters that are starting to sign with kind of celebrity figures out there that are trying to get involved with boxing? What advice would you give to them before they put the ink on the paper?
Man, I would just say that, you know what, like, at the end of the day, you know, when you look at the top boxing promoters in the world, you got people like Top Rank, you got people like Golden Boy Promotions, you got people like Al Haymon now with PBC and all that stuff. I think these are the guys that are really taking boxing to the next level, you know, and if you really believe in your talent and you believe you can make it somewhere, then I would really advise these fighters to look to sign to promoters like Golden Boy and Top Rank and Al Haymon rather than sign to promoters like, you know, superstar rappers and things like that. I don't know how Roc Nation's going, but it seems to be doing pretty good, you know. Seems that, you know, Jay-Z made good on his promises with Miguel Cotto, and, you know, I think Jay-Z seems to have the right idea. He's got a really good guy working for him, David Istowich. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, I think, you know, 50 Cent never thought that he and Floyd Mayweather would part ways, you know, and it's unfortunate for him because, you know, they did and ended up going down the wrong road, you know?
Do you hope that you get a call from him now that you've kind of been opening up about the situation between you two? Do you hope that he gives you a call and tries to make ends with you, mends with you, because of
no.
the fact that he is a
no.
guy that can, no?
No, I don't care. You know something, like, being completely honest, you know, the guy is classless as you can get because, you know, I was a guy that was signed to his company. We're supposed to be friends. My wife passed away last year. Do you think that the guy picked up the phone and said, look, man, my condolences? Doesn't matter. I'm not worried about it. Boxing's only a small part of my life, you know, and boxing doesn't define who I am. So I'm not really worried about what 50 Cent does and what he says and how many people he has on Facebook or Twitter trying to troll me or whatever it is. I couldn't care less, you know. Trust me when I tell you, I've been through a lot more than what you know, people can say whatever they want, but people don't know the story of what I've been through in my life. So, you know, for me to get to this point and to have won world titles and to live so far, you know, we live in Australia. When you say an Australian's a world champion, it's something that happens like one off. It's not something that happens all the time, you know. So, you know, I achieved my dream of being a world champion. You know, I earned money in the process, you know, and like I'm comfortable. I'm living a good life at home and everything is cool. I don't mind.
There was an article that came out recently about you that talked about the hardest year any person can live. My condolences to you, Billy. I'm really sorry for your loss.
Thank you, man.
You're welcome. Can you talk about now? I mean, you say you have there's this fire in you. You have a lot to fight for. Your last loss was a stoppage. You've had a couple stoppage losses now. What is it that you're fighting for? Is it a title? Is it just to prove to yourself that you can win again?
The truth is that, you know, it's not about the money, you know, because I'll tell you now, when I was a kid and when I was fighting for free and, you know, fighting for trophies and stuff, I loved the sport a lot more. And, you know, prior to signing to 50 Cent, I was fighting for the love of the sport, you know. I was earning good money fighting at home. I wasn't being greedy. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get promised this deal and, you know, you start feeling a little disheartened because you're not getting paid your minimum. So then you find yourself fighting for money. And so for now, you know, I'm looking just to get back in the ring, you know, just to get back in the winning circle. And I'm sure that, you know, other doors will open up. You know, I guess you're only one win away from fighting for another world title. And so, you know, I'm just going to take it fight by fight. And then, you know, God willing, at some stage in the next year or so, I'll get another opportunity at a world title. And hopefully I can turn the the wrongs to right, you know what I mean? And hopefully if I can win another world title, I'll be sure to make sure that I steer it in the right direction. You know, I don't get enticed into signing with people that are not going to steer me in the right direction.
Well, there you go. Billy Dib here on Leaving the Ring Radio, man. Again, I want to thank you, bro, for coming through and talking to us here and giving us the feedback. I mean, the feed of what happened between you and 50. I hope everything goes well.
Look,
I hope you get back
guys,
on your feet.
Let me tell you one thing before I go. 50 Cent responding just shows you how guilty he is. Because if he felt that I was just talking rubbish, I wouldn't. If I was him and I thought that I was talking rubbish, I wouldn't respond. You know, I get a lot of people that message me on social media and try to bag me out and say I don't respond to them. But the reason why he responded is because he knows he's in the wrong. I guarantee you that you ask Andre the Real, he'll tell you the same thing. You ask Gamboa, he'll tell you the same thing. You know, you ask that young fighter from New York, blue chip boxer, he'll tell you the same thing. You know, these kids are all being dealt wrong. You know what I mean? Hence the reason
right.
why Andre the Real sat out, got paid out his contract, and went and signed with Al Haymon. You know what I mean? Made the best move for his own career.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me. I had somebody that was, you know, they were looking at James Kirkland, I think it was, and it was kind of a fight. I think it was between Tyson and Fitty. He ended up going with Fitty, but Tyson isn't even promoting in the sport either, and it's got to be hard out there, man. You guys fight, like, every day. You know, the training alone would kill most people, and then you're just hoping for a shot at some glory, you know, It's a hard hug.
Look, it's a tough industry, man. It's not an easy industry. It's a tough industry, and unfortunately, sometimes fighters get sucked in and make the wrong decisions. You know what I mean? They end up ruining their careers. But look, at the end of the day, I don't feel that I've ruined my career. You know, I still lived out my dream. I managed to win 2 world titles in 2 weight divisions. You know, I defended them on numerous occasions. I made a lot of money. So I'm comfortable, you know. I mean, I'm happy. Life is good for me. I'm not really worried about what 50 Cent and what the rest of the boxing media have to say. At the end of the day, the history books say that I was a world champion. I defended it, and all good.
Yeah, that's true, man. And I like your stance too, as well, when it comes to, I mean, being somebody that's pretty vocal and not afraid to say what they want and get it across. I've kind of watched that with you, defending, you know, being Muslim and telling people like, hey, this is. That you guys have the wrong perception of what Muslim people are all about, you know, and I condone you for that, man. I think that's great that you're always defending that fact, that that's not the image that's been painted. It's the image that the media has painted of Muslim people.
That's right, man. Well, at the end of the day, you know, you can't judge people. You know, you can't judge a race or a community or a religion on based on what one person does. You know what I mean? We're not. Because people make mistakes all the time, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's sometimes you know, an Anglo does something that's, you know, out of line, you know what I mean? And he doesn't bring his whole faith down with him. But unfortunately for us, you know, one Muslim person does something and next thing you know, the whole community pays for it.
Absolutely, man. Again, brother, I want to thank you one more time for coming on the show. Really greatly appreciate it, man. We wish you all the best, Billy.
Thank you guys very much. You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
I think Billy Dave... What's that?
No, go for it. What are you going to say?
I think Billy Dave said it best when he said, Oh, man, I lost my train of thought. Sorry, I'll get it back. Go ahead, David.
Hey, that's how... Oh, Felipe's sitting in the tunnel right now. He's a lookout. He just saw some headlights. Oh shit. Hey, they're coming. It's okay.
No. I was thinking about it while he was talking, and I completely lost it. I'll get it back. Stop. You know, what happens when you start drinking?
There you go. I know, man. You got to drink like Tecate Light or something like that, bro. That's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah,
you know,
show,
so I can be able to
drink Tecate Light.
There you go. I think what Billy Dib is kind of showing out, and this is something that I think that should be discussed here, is that the fact of just because you bring a face or you have the cash doesn't really play out that you're going to be a good promoter in boxing. There's a lot more to learn about the sport. You know, some folks think it's about putting two guys in the ring and it's going to end up folding itself on its own. But that's not the way it works. You know, there's a lot of mechanics behind being a promoter, setting up an event, expensive, and not all the time. I think it's one of the toughest things to realize that at any given moment, as a promoter, you have to wait for that phone call where a guy doesn't make weight, where a guy doesn't show up, or a visa was not approved, or a guy gets hurt at camp. There's so many variables, and you have to have that Rolodex of numbers to be able to fall back on. And that's something that these promoters that think that, well, I'm a mega star, so I'm already going to bring an audience. Everything else is going to play itself out, and we'll be in a safe zone. That's not the way things happen. Look at even with Mike Tyson, like you mentioned a little earlier, Gabriel. Just because you bring a name doesn't mean you're going to bring the crowd to watch a fight. They, at the end of the day, people want quality fights, and that's what you have to provide.
Dude, remember Boxing 360? You know, that company.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Steve would say, like, they're always in litigation. It's like, well, they're always having to sue people for stealing their fighters or pulling a fast one on their fighters. It is, as Bob Arum says, you know, the desert is strewn with, you know, bleached bones of those who have tried.
Yeah.
You know, it's boxing promotion is, it's you know, it's like territory. There are people that are entrenched, and they don't want anybody else to come on in.
Yeah, and I got my train of thought back, guys. I know what I was going to say. Billy Tibbett is the best. Why are other guys leaving 50 Cent? And that's true. I mean, everybody's left 50 Cent because they knew there was nothing there. You know, they all fell in love with, you know, 50 Cent, the rapper, the hip-hop artist, the multimillionaire, because the guy is a multimillionaire. But just because you're good at one business, like David is saying, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be good in boxing. Boxing is its own animal. The business of boxing is its own animal. And if you're not a guy that's super shrewd, like a Bob Arum or a guy that's, you know, Harvard smart like Al Haymon or you know, a straight gangster like Don King, you're not going to succeed at the level that these guys succeeded. You know, you might be able to do something here and there like you know, 50 Cent has done, but you're not going to succeed and have the longevity of the you know, Bob Arum has been doing this for freaking 40 years, you know, 40, almost 50 years. Don King did it almost as long, you know, and it just takes that very special type of person to be able to do it for that long in this business.
You know, at the end of the day, what the three things of those three guys you just named right now have in common is they're all number guys. They understand how to crunch numbers. They know how to maneuver numbers around to make things fit. Because regardless if you have a background as an attorney or something else that comes along in that way, because it's proven, not even Lou DiBella could make his company as successful. He needed another vehicle to jump on and couldn't even be the driver of it. He needed to be the passenger in order to have something successful. He was on his last leg with Sergio Martinez. Look how difficult it was for him to get Sergio Martinez on big platforms. So it just shows the Al Haymans of the world, the Bob Arums of the world, the Don Kings of the world, and even with Oscar De La Hoya, he could tell you himself, he's not the guy that crunches the numbers. He seeked out to find these guys that knew how to do that knew how to put things together and make it functional, workable.
Well, Richard Schaefer, the guy's a freaking Swiss banker. I mean, he's the guy that made it successful, and that's another good example. You know,
banker.
Oscar,
need I say more? Bob Arum.
And Oscar De La Hoya, I mean, this is Oscar freaking De La Hoya. I mean, this guy is the golden boy, and he's had his financial troubles. He's had his troubles. He's putting on fights on Estrella TV. Who has Estrella TV? Name somebody that has Estrella TV so they can invite me over to their house and actually watch these fights, because I don't know anybody that has Estrella TV.
You know what? I'm glad that you said that, because I thought
also,
I was the only one
streaming. And I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was just saying, I'm glad that somebody else just said that they don't have it, because I don't. I thought I was going to be like the one man out of everything, of not having Estrella, because I was the same way like you, Felipe. On the night of Randy Caballero, I'm over here searching through the internet trying to find that channel and get a stream, which I did, and it was on Ring TV as well. So, but what were you going to say, Gabriel?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're really moving towards the future with these two digital channels that they started. You know, Ring TV Live as well, like a third channel. Oscar's always been kind of looking towards the future. Remember last year he bought that De La Hoya TV, and people were like, you know, kind of laughing. Sorry, something's in my throat.
Another channel that I don't know anybody that has De La Hoya TV, you know. No, and I hope
But I think that's part of, I think, a streaming package that's going to happen online. I think that's
and I hope the content gets streamed online, because De La Hoya TV is starting to put some really good fights in Mexico that used to be on the major network down here at Televisa, but for whatever reason, they Golden Boy has a really good relationship with a promoter down here in Mexico called Cancun Promotions, and they're starting to put some really good fights. Jorge Linares has fought on there, Yurokis Gamboa has fought on there, but they put it on De La Hoya TV. I don't know anybody that has De La Hoya TV in Mexico, so hopefully they start streaming those fights too on Ring TV, and we'll be able to catch them because they are putting on some good stuff on there.
That's what it appears to be the plan, is that if you don't have one, you just get the content out there. You don't hear the free brigade yelling about Oscar's free internet, but he's brought it to the masses just in a different way, not on terrestrial TV. But that is the new terrestrial TV. I mean, everybody's developing content online. YouTube is developing towards that. Twitch TV is developing towards that. That's the new way of the world, an on-demand service.
This is my only thing with that, though, Gabe. It's like I like the idea of the whole digital thing, but the fail part of it right now for me is that they're not announcing that. They're not pushing that. I'm not seeing them talk about that by mentioning when they are on television, regular television, getting it across to the viewers that they're going digital. Well, you're going to find these fights on digital. They say Estrella TV. Guess what? The common person, the simple-minded guy is going to be like, Estrella TV, look for it very quick, and then realize it's not on their list of networks, and then they're not going to find the thing. I think they're failing at that point. I mean, they need to figure out a way of getting that across if it's going to go digital, because the fact that fight fans are lazy. They're not going to stay up all night looking for it. Only the hardcore fans like myself, which I did for the Estrella thing. I stood up for a couple of hours just to find the stream to watch the fight, you know?
I don't think Estrella TV wants them to start promoting their streaming, you know, channel, Ring TV. They're going to be taking away the viewers from Estrella TV and saying, well, I can watch it on Ring TV. So I don't think that's something that Estrella TV wants them to be promoting on the air. That might
but
be
it,
the reason that
streamed.
They're not watching it.
It is streamed on Estrella TV, though. That's what I'm saying. It is. You can watch it on internet on Estrella TV. It is live streamed.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. See what I'm saying? Like, we don't really know the extent of how quick you can get the fight on the stream because it's not being promoted in that way. It's being mentioned that they're going to have fighters fight, and it'll just say Estrella TV, but it doesn't say it's digital or you could stream it and sit back and watch it. I think that's the failed process of that there right now, and they're losing viewerships, in my opinion, because they're not getting that across. I don't know what you think, but that's my feeling and my thought.
Hmm. Well, it's hard for me to tell because, I mean, I'm seeing it, you know, and I'm planning on watching it digitally. So, you know, I don't know if it's missing me or not. I'll have to look. I get, you know, all the press releases and stuff. But I hear your point. I mean, it's a strange transition right now, too, you know.
It's a scary transition.
The live event is not the same as it used to be, you know. And you've got, you know, you do have people who like to live tweet the fights and get all excited. But then there's also all the PBC stuff, too, and Bounce TV. And you go, you know, more than ever I'm hearing people say there's, like, too much boxing, which is a strange thing. Like, from Doug Fisher in his column, he's like, it's really hard to keep up with all the fights that are happening. You know, I mean, it's hard to keep track of the whole thing. I don't know. But I'm weird in the way I watch my fights. I almost don't watch anything live anymore.
Right. Yeah, no, I was going to say that. But, you know, I mean, look, it is a bold and ballsy move by Golden Boy. And I applaud them for doing that. You know, it's just almost in the same way, in the same breath of saying Al Haymon taking on all this investment fund and trying to get it back into the stream mainstream was a ballsy move as well, which we're going to get into here in a bit here, Felipe. I know he's back on right now.
And I agree with you, David, that, you know, it's Oscar taking the bull by his horns, you know. I mean, he says, hey, I got to get these guys out there. I got to show these guys. It's going to cost me money one way or the other. So I want to get them out there, expose them, have people see who they are. And if I can't do it on Estrella TV because their audience is not wide enough, and if you know, Al Heyman paid Fox Sports to get me out of there, because essentially that's what he did, then I'm going to look for my own avenue. I'm going
to
look for my own avenue. So here's this studio I built, and I'm going
to
stream it. It's a great idea, and I applaud him just like you on that. And hopefully he gives us, you know, the fight that we expect for these guys to get on, because, you know, there's no – I don't know what the actual financial situation is of it. So if they're going to be spending their own money, obviously they're not going to risk their fighters in a fight that's going to be streamed online. So like you say, David, at the end of the day, it's about the fight. So hopefully they give us some content there that it's going to make us want to watch on the computer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. We're going to go move on into talking about the PBC and the New York attorney stating that there's a lawsuit here, and kind of talk a little bit about that here. I got a lot of emails from last week discussing Al Heyman, the financial problems, and then from TNR having a financial investor consultant come through and kind of break down money-wise in terms of what PBC has been doing and with that fund there. But let's I want to patch in some Fight fans really quick, man. We didn't have a chance to do that last week. Let's do it this week. Area code 714, you're on live right now in Leaving Ring. What's on your mind? 714, you out there, brother?
Hey, it's Lenny the Fight Smith.
Lenny, hey, congratulations, man. Tomorrow you're going to have your debut show, Technical Draw. Looking forward to it. First guest is going to be Lou DiBella. It's going to be really interesting to hear two lawyers head-to-head on a discussion in boxing, and I can't wait for the questions they're going to be throwing out there. Should be really, really interesting, man. So, Fight fans, please tune in tomorrow at 6 p.m., Lenny the Fight Smith will be doing his first show, Technical Draw. Hey, you got anything to add on about for tonight's show, man, or what is the what's the plan for tomorrow's show?
I just wanted to kind of you guys did a great job of introing the show. I want to just briefly tell everybody kind of what I'm shooting for with the show. I don't think we're not going to be going every week, but we're going to be tackling interviews as they come up, as interesting subjects come up, and I'm trying to do. We're calling it the Technical Draw because it's going to be a little bit more in-depth interviews. I'm not going to be asking the interviewees about any basic stuff. I mean, generally kind of stick with the theme of the network. We like to dig a lot deeper and get into the root of issues in the sport. So I'm really excited to have Lou on as my first guest, and I'm looking forward to it. Also, great job with Billy Dibb. That was a great interview. He was really candid, which is really all you can ask for from these guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. I was just happy that we were able to get him through on the show because, like I said, I was having some difficulties calling his number and patching him in. But, hey, Lenny, thanks, man. Look forward for tomorrow night on your show, Technical Draw.
All right, thanks, guys.
Let's go on with area code 510. You're on live right now, Leaving Ring. What's on your mind? 510, you out there, brother? Okay, we're going to try one more call here really quick. 716, you're on live right now and Leaving Ring. What's on your mind? 716. Okay, we got a lot of people just tuning in and listening. So let's move on here. Hey, PBC here again in the news. Here's what I'm hearing is that a New York attorney has their clients, which is obviously going after the Wendell and Reed group about monies that were, you know, invested, and there's a list of several other people that are on that are being pointed out in the lawsuit here. And PBC and Al Heyman's name is obviously one of the names that are on that list here. You know, and the more and more I play with this, man, $155 million that were spent. And I was talking to you, Gabriel, I believe, earlier about this and a few other folks and stuff. And I keep going through, and I think I talked to you about it too, Felipe, about the numbers, you know, because a lot of folks, I'm getting emails, like I said, from last week going, how does a guy spend $455 million so quickly in a year period? And you have to go back and look at and the small shows. And this is only me just pitching ideas of what I think. Okay, you think it's what $800,000 for the smaller shows, and then for big shows you triple that. But the amount of fighters that he has in the stables, 300. So he had to venture out for his fighters to make sure they were getting paid. And on top of what the fighters were getting paid, he was giving them far more X amount of money, right? Felipe, I mean, that's the only way, you know, I would think that a lot of that money was really sucked out of the fund, in the investment fund, you know. But on top of that, he was not only was he paying this fighter's good money, but he was obviously getting a promotional fee, management fee, matchmaker fee. There's rumors that he was buying his tickets and then reselling it back into the market. You know, so there's a lot of money being thrown around, and some folks believe that he may be broke. I don't find that at all. Here's another thing, too. A lot of people think that this is the end of PBC. This is it. I don't believe that as well either, because we have seen some dates already implicated that there's fights are going to be happening and later in this year. I still say that they still got another year or two strong run, you know. And at the same time, I think that the plan was to be self-destructive, because there was no plan of being around boxing for a long period of time. They knew that they were going to go and put something fast up really, really quick before anybody would notice that this money was really being used as kind of a filter, filtering it back to their pocket, into their own pockets. I could be way off, but the way I look at those particular things, I'm thinking this was a plan to just self-destruct in a short, fast period of time.
Well, David, I mean, if we were able to figure it out, we did have our conversation, I think, yesterday. I'm pretty sure the Justice Department was able to figure it out. I mean, it makes total sense. I mean, if this guy is acting as a quote-unquote advisor and not an actual promoter or manager, but he is making a percentage, well, he's taking money. What's that saying? Taking money from Peter to pay off Paul or rob Paul, whatever the case may be. I'm not too good at American things. But anyways, you know, but that's exactly what he's doing. He's taking the money from the fund. You know, he's paying Adrian Broner, for instance, and then he's making a percentage of it. And the fund is losing, you know, all this money. But the one that's making the money is the fighters, the matchmakers, like you mentioned, the booking agents for the opponents that they're getting, and himself as the quote-unquote advisor. And I do agree with you that I don't know if they have another year in the coffers, but I do agree that there is some money, because they did announce that Adrian Broner against Ashley Theophane fight for April 1st. And we all know that Adrian Broner is going to be making at least $1 million, we would assume. I mean, the guy, you know, he's about billions for a reason. So I don't think he's going to be fighting for $50,000, $60,000, $75,000, which, you know, any other fight card that's on Spike TV will probably be the licensing fee for. But since we got their Weddle and Reed, since they're paying for the air, I'm pretty sure he's going to be making, I mean, I would guess at least $500,000. So there is some money there. Ashley Theophane is going to be making some money, and then the whole production. You know, so there is some money there still left over.
Right. Well, you know, here's the thing. If the plan wasn't to be a self-destructive company, you know, to come out fast and then die out quick plan, if they were really getting involved in this business here of have longevity, the model of what they were looking for, which was seize and take over rapidly in the boxing world, to me in the beginning wasn't a very smart plan, because the fact is that he was buying dates. He was buying all the dates and networks, sewing up all the fighters, United States fighters, which was leaving the other promoters out there to kind of just pick up the crumbs that are around him. Now, he had that locked down, but locking down with networks in terms of having advertisement money backing them was already telling me that they were just going for a long shot. Because the fact is that the number one sport here in the United States is NASCAR and football. And the contracts and advertisement deals that they have with the big boys in advertisement is a locked deal. They weren't going to go to a niche sport like boxing, which is a very tiny sport, and say, yeah, let's put money in that. Let's break our contract with NASCAR or football, because boxing obviously is going to bring more. Absolutely not. It's a very small little speck in the world of sports. So that was a failed plan there. Here's the other thing was, if it was in terms of having longevity, why didn't he not just say, I have $455 million in pocket right now, in the bank, sitting there. I could build fighters, meaning that I could just work with one or two networks. Why not stick to one or two networks, have four shows a month, you know, three small cards, and then a bigger card, right? Develop that with that network, but at the same time, tell those networks, pay for the production company, and I'll handle all the rest of the fees. Why wasn't that, you know, kind of rolled out in carpet? Instead, it was a siege take all type of deal, and it was ballsy, it was bold, but we're now kind of seeing little by little the explosions from here and there because of the mines that have been set up and they've been stepped on. I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that Al Haymon, who a lot of folks say he's very smart, very intelligent, he knows what he's doing. If that's the case, Gabriel, can we sit back and say he didn't see this from here to there? I can't believe that at all.
Well, I mean, it's if that's the case that you have one guy who is doing exactly what everybody's accused him of, but that certain lieutenants or people that work with him, promoters that work with him, whatever you want to call them, Bob Arum calls them sham promoters. You could look at them as kind of executives within, you know, an organization that exists but doesn't exist on paper. But whatever the case, you have a guy that's, you know, breaking the Ali Act, like we all have said, calling all the shots, being kind of the manager, promoter, operating just as an advisor, and then taking this money, knowing that, you know, he's getting a cut of all what the fighters are making, so whatever he pays back, you know, and then it's none of it's his money. He's buying time on TV, getting these guys on there, and then making money on the other end. Maybe it is self-destructive. Maybe it's just, it's a calculated gamble with other people's money. But this is what, you know, comes the problem is, does this, you know, the guy, Ryan Caldwell, is the guy that's really like the linchpin, it would seem, and certainly a key figure. He's a former Wad Allen Reed employee who resigned. He's a portfolio manager for both the Ivy League Fund, the Ivy Asset Strategy, and Wad Allen Reed Asset Strategy Fund, both of those. He resigned May 15, 2014.
Right.
But apparently there's been some problem with those funds ever since. Now, Wad Allen Reed is who invested in the PBC. Caldwell apparently resigned and then went over to work with Al. And then later, you know, all this money, you know, it turns out that's where it's coming from. What do all these things mean when they're on the table together? That's what's going to happen. You know, we're going to find out with this investigation. Hopefully we're going to find out in the top rank case, you know, how this was all structured and is this legal?
Right, exactly. And that's what it comes down to. Did Al Haymon do something illegal? And right now, if you look at it, he really didn't. He was handed this sum of money. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. Was spend it towards boxing, develop a brand, develop a promotional group, get fighters on networks, and he has delivered. But the way it was done, that's what's going to be in question. That's what's going to really be. But can you prosecute the guy for doing it the way he decided to do it when there is no formula in the sport of boxing? There's no formula to do that. You
well,
know,
well,
anyway,
the only thing that Al Haymon. The only
you're
thing
sure
Al Haymon has to prove. The only thing that Al Haymon has to prove is that he, in good faith, tried to make money from this whole endeavor. You know that he did try to get sponsors. That he did try to do this and do that with the money from the fund. You know, but you know, the stock market is a gamble. It is a gamble. It's a risk. People put the money in the fund and thinking that it was going to grow, it did not grow. And Al Haymon did, you know, quote unquote, in good faith, quote unquote, try to do what he needed to do was to make money, but it didn't pan out. Whether it was done, you know, as a plan, like David stating that it was, you know, always a plan to self-destruct and try to fill his pockets with as much percentage as he could, it might be, but they would have to prove that in a court of law that he didn't do that on purpose, that he in good faith tried to make money from the whole endeavor, but it just didn't pan out. And the one that actually did make money was him, because you know he was the CEO, quote unquote, of the company. And you know, it's like a company, if it fails, you're not going to go back to the CEO and say, hey, well, it failed for the last 2 years, give us your salary back. It doesn't work that way.
But here's the thing: is this legal? it depends on what you're asking about. You know, like, is it illegal for him to get this loan, go on this endeavor and fail? No. But what is Al Haymon to the PBC? What is his official position within that company, Haymon Boxing? Can you, if he's the CEO or the president of the company, can he be that and be the guy that makes a percentage on every one of the fighters that are fighting at the same time? Can you double dip like that? That's my
But can you also prove it in court? I mean, can you prove it in court that he is actually the guy handling the money? I mean, we all think that he's the guy handling the money. We all assume that he's the guy that's handling the money, that Al Haymon is the financial guy behind this whole thing. But on paper, who's actually getting handled, given that power of that money? You know, that's the thing that they would have to prove.
Yeah, that is the thing they would have to prove. And, hey, let's move on to our next subject here. We heard on the news out there in the boxing news is Chris Anami Ariola has been popped or busted with marijuana in his system. He was suspended for 90 days. He's going to be sitting down, can't fight. How big of a deal is this for him as a fighter? Obviously, it didn't do any service to him in the ring. But how big of a deal should this really be handled here, guys? I mean, is this something that should really not a lot of us should make a big fuss about because it is marijuana. It's not an enhancement. It's not a diuretic. It's nothing like that. It's not gonna improve his performance. If anything, it's still some would call it a recreational drug. But how important is it for any sanctioning body, any sanctioning body to really take a hold of this and say, like, we need to really suspend these guys or make a difference and make a name with this person for putting some type of for putting marijuana into their body? What's your take, Felipe?
Well, like we discussed it off the air, I think it was yesterday, you know, a state commission, you know, whether they went public with it for a reason, and Gabriel actually touched on it at the beginning of the show, or actually on the next round I was listening to it, where why did it take so long for this result to happen, to come out in the public when the fight was in December and it's barely coming out in February. But as a state commission, even though, like you mentioned, David, and I do believe and I do agree with you, it's not an enhancement. It's not going to make them fight better. It's not going to give them more stamina. But they can't justify, they can't endorse or to have a guy, you know, smoking weed. I mean, the guy's a professional athlete. He's getting paid as a professional athlete. And, you know, whether you may think of it or not, he may have some kids looking up to him, and the state can't approve of this guy, you know, being a pot smoker. And if it comes out, then they had to suspend him. Now, the suspension to me is ridiculous. I mean, it's retroactive back to December. By March 12th, he could be back in the ring. So it's not really that much of a punishment, but I believe that they just have to save face and say, hey, this guy, you can't be a professional athlete and be, you know, smoking marijuana. I mean, it's happened in other sports. It happened with that running back in football. I forgot the guy's name. He had dreadlocks, you know.
Ricky Williams?
Yeah, Ricky Williams. I mean, the guy was a phenom. He ran faster than anybody else, but he was a pot smoker, and they had to do something about it, you know. So I think that's the only reason. I mean, if it was something more serious like steroids or something that would, you know, affect the actual fight, I think that obviously the suspension would be more aggressive and the there would be more scrutiny regarding Chris Arreola. But for the pot, you know, they just have to make an example of the guy and say, hey, man, you can't be a professional athlete and be smoking pot. And if you're going to get popped for it, you're going to be dumb enough to be popped for it.
I couldn't disagree with you more about that statement. That you can't be a professional athlete and smoke pot.
I'm not saying you're
fooling yourself if you think athletes at a high level don't smoke pot. I mean, I watched this 45-minute interview the other day with Ricky Williams about his journey through weed. He doesn't smoke weed anymore, but he described it as kind of helping him to kind of get to another level where he could really understand himself as a human being and really understand his true purpose in life. Like
that's the argument of every pothead, though. That's the argument of every pothead. It's like, oh, well,
I think actually your argument or the argument of people that don't really know anything about weed. The reason why he was suspended was because it's against federal law, and Texas is one of the few states that's still holding out. More than half the states already have legal medical marijuana, and if that was available in his state, he could have asked for a therapeutic use exemption, since I'm sure Chris has a medical marijuana card here in California. Like anybody that uses marijuana, myself included, on a regular basis, I tend not to drink because it's actually bad for you. President Obama came out
Sorry,
and said,
I was just blowing out my marijuana.
But
well, I mean, my point being, Gabriel, though, is that the state, like you just mentioned it, the state can't condone him being a professional athlete and being
state.
A pot smoker.
In Colorado, it's recreational use and medical use are available, and I believe in Oregon as well. It's now becoming kind of a state's issue. It's against federal law, but, I mean, dude, it's ridiculous. I mean, if you ever smoked a joint in your life, I smoked before this show. I'm perfectly fine, perfectly clear about it. Probably much more than somebody that had maybe a drink or two. It's just quite.
But
simply,
here's the thing, Gabriel. Let's say the Peyton Manning, is that the Peyton Manning, the quarterback? I don't know anything about football. Peyton Manning, the quarterback of the Denver Broncos. If he would have been, if he comes out positive for pot, the NFL is going to go after him. We don't have the NFL. We have the commission. So the commissions have
to regulate. If Peyton Manning tested positive for pot in the NFL, you wouldn't hear about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's true because they have to protect the image. But we didn't hear about Ricky Williams. We did hear about Ricky Williams.
Guys, they weren't smoking in the game. Pot stays in your system for like 30 days. So they don't test for alcohol. You could have probably a few drinks and not get caught with that. And that's worse.
Nicky Mano used to drink in the dugout.
And it certainly impairs you more. It definitely impairs you more. I mean, Eddie Bravo, who's one of like the great jiu-jitsu artists in the world, creator of 10th Planet No-Gi Jiu-Jitsu, who's like a pioneer in the sport, he even said, I wouldn't be as good a jiu-jitsu player as I am without marijuana. He didn't smoke till deep into his life. Like I think he was like 28, 29, something like that. I mean, I think that the world needs to catch up with the science of it and to understand that it actually can be used medicinally depending on the strain you're using. I mean, when I was doing jiu-jitsu, I smoked sativa before because it's a heady kind of weed, and it's pretty great for that. I can see it actually as something of an enhancer mentally a little bit. But I don't think anybody would ever smoke before an event. But my point is, let's say Chris smoked during camp. Now, he gets tested, you know, maybe he smokes, like, close to the fight. It's still in the system. He gets caught. How many athletes do you think have maybe drank close to an event? Probably quite a few. John Jones says he's barely been clean for most of his camps. If you saw his first big interview when he came out of hiding from everything that he went through.
I hear what you're saying, but but the bottom line is that alcohol is not it's not banned in that state. The problem is that he went to a state where they're not going to accept the fact that he has marijuana in his system. It's the rule on the law that was broken, and I think that's where Felipe is going at, is that it's not up to us. It's what the law is. That's what they ruled for, and that's what you're going to have to follow. If alcohol was part of the rule, then, of course, he would be suspended because we know a lot of these athletes drink.
This is the double standard
yeah.
that bothers me. Is that
right.
Like Felipe is saying, oh, you can't be a pothead. And it's not. I'm a pothead. I smoke weed. Hey. I will work out. I'll work out. I will smoke a big fat joint, Felipe. I'll put this challenge to you. And then I will go box 2 hours. And I challenge you to keep up with me after smoking
I have nothing against
But there was Peyton Manning at the Super Bowl saying, I'm going to have a Budweiser and hang out with my kids. Now, I'll put up the stats of how many people die from drunk driving or just liver failure or, you know, all kinds of problems due to alcohol compared to the numbers compared to pot. I just think it's a stupid rule, and it should go away, in my opinion.
I'm not against pot. I haven't smoked pot in a long time or marijuana or ganja, however you want to call it. I haven't done it in a long time. I have, you know, I've done it in the past. But, like I mentioned, and David got what I was saying, is that the state, and even in California, which is legal for medicinal use, you know better than I do, Gabriel, if a boxer, even if they have the medical card and they get popped in California positive as a boxer, is he going to get suspended?
Yeah, and it's a joke.
But that's the thing. It's like it's a federal law and they can't break the law.
No,
I'm not saying
if you have a legitimate medical reason for having it, you can apply for a 2E in California. And I believe you can apply for a 2E in Nevada. I don't believe it's legal at all in Texas. And maybe that's part of the learning curve is that, you know, in half the states it's legal, half the states it's not. If you're going to go fight in one, you better figure out how you can, you know, like if you want to keep smoking.
What would you?
Some people.
What would you
Abdul
need? What would,
to
what would you have to have? Let me ask you this:
what
would you have? What would you have to have to get a 2E exempt? Like, what? It wouldn't have to be like a back problem. What else would qualify for you to get that card?
As a fighter.
Yeah.
It could be any number of things. It could be headaches because the guys are, you know, taking punches to the head. Some weed is good for like swelling, like they talk about like indigos and stuff like that, or that are more like the body. Or people use like they turn it into creams and stuff, but if people are like just vaping it. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar used to get migraines, and he said it helped him with that. All kinds of stuff, muscle relaxation. Some people just get, you know, anxiety, so they use it for that. For a fighter, I would say more than anything, it'd probably be headaches and just relaxing the body, pain relief, because they're always going to be in pain, and certainly an indica would work for that. Hmm. I think it's legit.
You're telling me if Chavez Jr. would have spoken to you before, he wouldn't have gone pop for the weed?
Yes, I am. Although, he's not a U.S. citizen. Is he? Is he born? Does he have dual citizenship? Or he's Mexican, right? All the way through.
Yeah, I don't know. Mexican.
So I don't know if he'd be able to get something like that.
You have to be a U.S. citizen to get a medical marijuana card?
I think you have to be a resident of the state that you're getting it in.
I think he's a resident, but I don't think
of California?
But he's not a U.S. citizen. I think so.
I think he has a visa.
I'll ask
it would
him
have to be
I
a
do.
Visa because he's working, right? It would have to be a visa.
But
yeah.
He has to have at least a B1, a P1, a performance visa to be able to work in the United States, which
right.
He does. You know, contrary to popular belief, technically he is working in the United States, even though he doesn't train or anything. Technically, he is working.
Well, hey, let's be fair. He's working to start working out. He's trying to get to that motivational, you know,
like,
step.
He's shadow boxing in his kitchen right now going, hey, Holmes, I'm working. I'm working right now.
Yeah, I'm working.
Give me that joint.
Oh, man.
I don't mean to be contentious with you, Felipe.
I think it was a little bit of miscommunication and what I was trying to say, and I think you misunderstood. And David, I'll tell you this much. About 6 years ago, I went to Jamaica, and it wasn't for the beaches. That's all I'm going to say.
Check it out, man. And
yeah,
Chapo had you everywhere.
Go. That's funny.
Hey, Gennady Golovkin has locked down a fight with Dominic Wade over there at the Forum. In Los Angeles, Mexican style is back in full effect. Here's the thing: is that you see the train that most folks have jumped on with Gennady Golovkin. Anytime this guy's been brought up, you get all these Gennady fans coming out of the woodworks and they praise him like he's just the next coming of Julio Cesar Chavez Sr., Mike Tyson's, you know, image type of style. But with the announcement of his fight coming up in Forum, there's a bit of a backlash. There's a lot of folks that are like, really? Another guy like this? What are your guys' thoughts and feelings about Gennady Golovkin and still trying to lock down a fight with Canelo Alvarez, who holds a WBC belt, who's going to be facing Amir Khan? But there's a strong possibility by messing around with an Al Haymon fighter that there could be, which Gennady Golovkin's manager mentioned, Tom, said that this could be a way of moving into fighting Danny Jacobs, who won a title over Peter Quillen. What do you guys think? What do you think about this next move here with Dominic?
Well, I think my hope is, I mean, I who knows what his plan is. But you look at it, and you're seeing him kind of expand back out into the rest of the universe. A lot of the good fights are moving to Showtime. We haven't seen, you know, the full plan for the rest of the year. Apparently, there's like 5 more dates coming pretty soon here, and some good fights. Like Vonis Martirosyan might be fighting, you know, Lara again. He might be fighting Jamal Charlo. I get them mixed up, but the one with the belt. But you know, so I wonder with this fight. It, in business, you bridge a gap like that, and it goes successful, and everybody makes money, and it's a good experience, then you want to do it again. So certainly, you know, I think Danny's a guy that does want to test himself, and he's got speed, he's got power and size. I'd certainly love to see that fight just to argue with Steve about it on the next round. Hopefully we'll see. I think Steve was pretty apt in what he said about this is going to show how good of a ticket seller, how much do people really want to see Gennady Golovkin when they don't know the opponent, and it's probably because of that they're going to assume that he's just going to walk right over the guy. It's a mandatory defense. They happen when your mission is all the belts. You got to do them. So I think it's right. Going to be, you know, interesting. I think he wins, but I haven't looked deep enough into the fight to just say that, so I'm not going to just make my pick now. We got time.
Well, Felipe, how good of a fighter is Wade?
You know what? Like Gabe, I mean, I haven't done my research because the fight's a little bit off. But, you know, who is he? You know, I know he's fought on the PBC. He's gotten up to on the rankings in the IBF. And, you know, it wasn't Golovkin's first choice. Golovkin's first choice is obviously Saúl Canelo Álvarez. His second choice was Billy Joe Saunders. You know,
yeah.
But now that the IBF has, you know, ordered this fight, and he wants to be the undisputed middleweight champion of the world, so he needs to defend against Dominic Wade or whoever was the number one ranked or whoever was the available ranked fighter for the IBF. Because what good is it for him to go after Canelo so strongly and then lose the IBF title? For not defending it, then it's there's no purpose to it, to his quest, which he has been talking about and harping about and going after for quite some time, ever almost since he won his first title. And he said, you know, I want all the titles at 160 pounds. So, you know, whoever it was at the IBF and whoever is going to be in the WBA when he needs to defend that one, and then obviously we know it's Canelo in the WBC, he's going to go after it. And that, to me, is something that we must applaud, because it's something that, you know, we don't see every day. I mean, we've seen it in the past. We saw Mike Tyson do it. We've seen Roy Jones do it. We saw Bernard Hopkins do it. And, you know, and those guys are first ballot Hall of Famers. There's a reason why we can rattle off those stats off the top of their heads, because it stayed with us. You know, Mike Tyson being American, Bernard Hopkins being American, Roy Jones being American. Gennady Golovkin wants to be the kind of guy that 10 years from now, we're going to be able to rattle off the top of our head as a guy that was the middleweight undisputed champion of the world, and he needs to do what he needs to do. Now, the HBO buying that fight and paying for that fight, which is a fight that, like you guys say, and it's true, that nobody knows who Dominic Wade is, you know, says something about their commitment to Gennady Golovkin. So, you know, that to me is something that it's we could applaud too, as the HBO, they have, you know, dug in behind Gennady Golovkin, and they're going to do whatever it takes to make this guy a star, whether Canelo and Golden Boy help them out or not.
Is there any similarities to Gennady Golovkin's career to Sergio Martinez, Gable? Do you see anything there, the criticism in terms of Gennady Golovkin not getting the fights that he wants, but staying active, which Sergio Martinez was obviously in that position? It wasn't the fights that he couldn't get. It was the fact that he couldn't get on networks, but he was keeping himself busy by fighting who was available and who were his mandatory. But he didn't have that that crossover name to make him that superstar at the time. What he did was Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., but he hadn't done much. There was no merit in what he brought to the table. What similarities do they have in terms of whether where Gennady Golovkin's at in his career, where Martinez was at one point, or is there any?
I think there it would be. You know, they're kind of similar in that you know they're not from here. They don't really speak the language, but you know they have pleasing styles. They want to get the knockout. They understand that it's about entertaining the fans. But I think, you know, Martinez got here, I think Golovkin's now, what, 33? Martinez was just getting here at 33. And he also had about 15, if I'm not mistaken, 15, maybe even 20 more fights on him. We got the tail end of Sergio Martinez. We didn't really get the whole thing, you know. And I think because you know, they got Triple G, you know, a little bit later in his career, but then they'd won it, he'd taken good care of himself. And they had a really clear plan, marketing-wise, and were able to implement that. I mean, because they had a little more time, they could be a little more patient, I guess, is the succinct way to say it. So, you know, I think Loeffler, you know, they're doing the right thing. They have a stated goal. I think the criticism is dying down about him moving up. Now that Andre Ward's moved to 75 and begun that campaign there, nobody's really yelling at Golovkin to move up. I think they've accepted, look, I want the belt, and now they're yelling at Canelo, you know, move all the way up to 60. So it's an interesting time to be him. If you look at this guy's record, Dominic Wade, I mean, it's a classic Heyman matchup for the guy in that he's jumping from going with a split decision in his last fight, his only fight of 2015 against Sam Solomon last June, jumping right in here on April 23rd, at the Forum in Inglewood against Gennady Golovkin, who's, you know, a three-belt champion. It's insanity. I don't think he stands a chance. I think he's going to get knocked out. And considering his ninth win was against a guy named Freddie Montoya, you know, I'm pulling for Golovkin in this fight. I want revenge for Freddie Montoya, who got knocked out. I just don't think Wade is ready. I don't think he's got the size. I mean, you know, he's 5'10". He's a big guy, but I mean, he's got a longer reach than Golovkin, 74.5-inch reach. But, I mean, you can't jump up in class like this and expect to do well. Maybe he surprises us, but 12 knockouts, 18 wins, no losses, I just don't see it.
I applaud him for staying busy. You know, a lot of folks are saying that he's just waiting around for Canelo. He's, you know, hoping to get that fight. But rather than staying stale and staying on the sidelines and watching while everybody else is moving, he's keeping himself busy. The one thing that I would have to say with Gennady Golovkin's career is his manager, Tom, obviously is not in the same breath of what Lou DiBella. Lou DiBella just didn't have the relationship with HBO. Didn't even have a relationship with Showtime until Al Heyman came along. At least Tom has that relationship and is able to try to at least have that kind of power of putting Gennady Golovkin on HBO. Roy Jones announced finally that he's going to retire after his last KO. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings? I said, man, you know, finally, but it should have happened 10 years ago, you know, or even more. After he got knocked out by Antonio Tarver, he just never looked the same again. Guys, really quick before we end the show, what are your thoughts really quick, Felipe Leon, on Roy Jones finally saying, hey, I'm hanging up the gloves, and he should hang up the gloves and hang up the promoter hat as well, in my opinion, and the trainer hat. Just the whole thing. Just stay out of it.
No, come on. You're being too harsh on him. Yeah, he should have retired 12 years ago. You know, he should have retired 12 years ago. And, you know, he's going to go in the Hall of Fame first ballot. You know, now he has to wait 5 years because that's the rule. You don't get voted in until 5 years after your last fight. And he's going to have to wait. But, you know, what would have happened if he would have retired 12 years ago or maybe a little bit after that heavyweight run that he did? I mean, his career would have been so much better in hindsight. We would have, but at the end we're going to say, man, that Roy Jones at 160 and 168 and 175 and even that heavyweight was good. But that last 12 years of Roy Jones, what happened? But you could say that about Sugar Ray Robinson as well. You know, the last part of his career, it was only about the money for Sugar Ray Robinson, considered the best
right.
ever. You know, as far as Roy Jones taking off the trainer hat, you know, I think so too. But as a promoter, you know, he's coming up. He has some TV dates. He's signing some fighters. So, you know, let's give him a chance. I mean, there's worse promoters out there. I'm not going to name any names, but there's worse promoters out there than Roy Jones Jr.
You're not going to name any names, but I'm pretty sure Gabriel Montoya will. Gabriel, what's your take?
I just don't call it a retirement. He's been done for years. It's, you know, I mean, he should have, like, you know, I think Felipe covered it really well. I mean, it's a good career. I think it could have been better. I think it's the model for Floyd's career in some senses, that he kind of took, he sold a persona rather than fights. After a while, it was like, you know, I mean, the policeman, the mailman, I mean, it was, you know, the Rockettes. He lived out his dreams, but I don't think really we got the career that we could have gotten had somebody else been calling more of the shots and demanding more of Roy. I would like to have seen a Hopkins fight, a rematch happen sooner after Hopkins got some seasoning and really meant something. Instead, we got 60-40, I'll kick your ass. We got a good sound bite. We didn't get a fight. And the fight we ended up getting was just ugly and sad. Two guys getting a payday, and it's just a shitty fight that I'll never watch again. I don't know. I'm not the biggest Roy Jones fan, you know. Kind of showed that when he did finally have like a bugaboo, you know, in Tarver, look what happened. You know, he had to stand and trade with somebody. But I think, you know, had he stopped at heavyweight and walked out, we might have been saying, you know, what a great career. But I don't know. For me, it's a bittersweet. It's like also here's a guy that had a positive drug test early in his career. Then he jumped up to heavyweight. Nobody really says anything. And it's funny, if you watch, I forget which fight it is. I think it was De La Hoya, Mosley 2, something like that. It was a recent fight I was rewatching. And Roy Jones talks about not wanting to go up to heavyweight. There's no way he could. No, it was Chris Bird versus Ike Bayabuchi. And Roy Jones says he just doesn't believe he could ever go up to heavyweight. And then years later, he does. That's always been kind of suspect to me, how he did that. So for me, I guess it's just the anti-Roy Jones retirement speech. But, you know, not good riddance, but I just wasn't that happy when you're even here in your prime. Great fighter at 68, but, you know, that's about it.
That's about it here on Leaving the Ring. If you missed any of the missed the show, don't worry about it. It'll be up again and within the hour. You can catch it on the archives there. And you can tune in and listen to what Billy Dave had to say about 50 Cent. All the discussions of Oriella, we talked about his weed suspension, 90 days. We also went across Andre Ward and Barrera, talked about that upcoming fight, see what's going to happen there. And we touched a little bit here on PBC and El Heyman and the New York lawsuit, as well as Roy Jones Jr. retirement. Don't forget, tomorrow night, here on Leaving the Ring Network, we're going to have Lenny the Fight Smith, his debut show, Technical Draw. His guest is going to be Lou DiBella. Both are going to go head-to-head, toe-to-toe on an interview. It's something that shouldn't be missed. Then on Friday, it is going to be Full Court Press, an NBA-NFL podcast brought to you by Leaving the Ring Network. And then always on Mondays, you have TNR, The Next Round. And on Tuesdays, you have the In the Squared Circle with Felipe Leon, who's on right now with Leaving the Ring. Don't forget, we're here Wednesday, 6 p.m. We'll be right back at it Wednesday night again. So everybody, have a great night. Guys, thanks for coming on. Thanks for chopping it up. Always
David,
fun talking boxing. What's up?
David, I'd like to thank you for having me on your show for the second time and not making me translate for a whole hour. I'd like to thank you for that.
You're lucky, man, because I was going to bring another Spanish-speaking fighter and stuff, man. Hey, you did a great job, though. You know, a lot of
just
people.
Just because I'm in Tijuana, you don't have to make me your workhorse and, you know, make me do all the heavy lifting here, okay?
I didn't make you my workhorse. I made you my mule. Let's get that straight, man. Anyways, guys,
jobs,
everybody
man.
Out there that you
American Texas. Translators.
Yeah, yeah. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Don't forget about the other show. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Guys, have a great night, man.
Peace.